It's a great pleasure of mine to be able to introduce our next speaker, Juan Cole. He's a professor of history at the University of Michigan. And he's one of the leading U.S. scholars on the Middle East. Actually, when something happens in the Middle East, as it has over the last week, of course, I always turn to Juan Cole and his informed comment at juancole.com to figure out what's really going on over there, because you can't simply find it out watching ABC or CBS or CNN, and you can't find it out certainly reading the corporate press here in the United States. But he is able to decipher what's going on because he speaks about 10 different languages, and including Arabic and Hebrew and all sorts of languages that I'm jealous about and wish I could speak them as well as he could. On top of that, he may not look like it. You can take a look at him when he comes up here, but he's really a dangerous man. You can ask Bush and Cheney about them, because Bush and Cheney actually sicked the CIA on Juan Cole. Why did they do that? Because he was telling the truth about the Iraq War. And it's dangerous for the powers that be when we tell the truth in this country, sad as that is. You may have seen Juan Cole on Fareed Zakaria's show, or once on the Stephen Colbert show. But now you get to see him in person. I give you Juan Cole.
Well, thanks so much, everyone. I'm so delighted to be here with you in what I refer to as Tahrir Square West, and especially on this weekend when we've had this wonderful court ruling declaring unconstitutional Governor Walker's attack on the public unions. I'm addressing you at a time of great turmoil in American relations with the Middle East, for which none of us should ever apologize. Apparently, if you do something bad, you should just tough it out and never apologize. There was a saying in the early 20th century, which some people have attributed to Ambrose Bierce, but we historians really aren't clear on who came up with it, that said that war is God's way of teaching Americans geography. And that may have been true 100 years ago or 50 years ago. I regret to report to you that it's no longer working. Oh, we're still having the wars, but it's not teaching us geography anymore. And despite the rise of 24-hour so-called news channels and despite an advanced schooling system and great universities, we seem to be sleepwalking through the American empire abroad, not really paying very much attention to it. 2 weeks ago, the United States fired a drone missile in South Yemen. The drone missiles are usually pretty accurate, but this one missed. It killed 14 innocent people. Of course, since there haven't been any trials, we can't be sure about the guilt of any of the ones that the drones kill. And some of them have been American citizens. How many people here knew that we rubbed out 14 ordinary everyday Yemenis 2 weeks ago? Yeah. So the people who know that are here, you see, and the rest of the country probably doesn't. And yesterday, 4,000 angry Yemenis gathered around the U.S. Embassy, in part, this is part of the hysteria and protest against this Islamophobic film, the trailer of which was released in Arabic in July. But I suspect that it's not just rumors of a YouTube trailer that has angered those 4,000 people. I mean, the fact that the United States is more or less fighting a war in their country. It's a war. Congress hasn't declared it. It's classified, so we can't discuss it. We're not supposed to know it exists. The drone strikes are run by often the CIA, so they're classified. So is there a war in Yemen or isn't there? We don't know. And then when 4,000 Yemenis attack our embassy, I don't know. I think that maybe got 5 seconds on our cable news programs yesterday, and that will be the end of it. We won't hear about Yemen today. You know, the United States is a hyperpower. The French came up with this term, hyperpower. I can't say it with the same sneer that they inject into it, but it's a big country. It's 320 million people, and it throws its weight around. It's got a $15 trillion economy, and Yemen is this little dinky country in off of the Red Sea, and we're applying our might in that country with no legal framework whatsoever. Did anyone ask you, would you like to throw drones on Yemen? We're in a situation where the United States is doing a lot of things that we don't even know about and don't approve of. We've lost control of our foreign policy. As a republic, our founding generation believed that a republic was full of responsible citizens who would make collective decisions. We're in a situation now where even a relatively good guy like Barack Obama is claiming to be assassin in chief. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger could never be president because he was born in Austria, but we get the Terminator anyway. And this apparently there's a process going on here which is beyond parties. Although I have to say that, you know, if we have to have an assassin in chief, better Obama than some of his rivals. At least I probably don't have to look over my shoulder too much. But we've lost control of this process to where these unconstitutional things are constantly being declared as perfectly normal. We had a law passed in the United States that forbade the U.S. government to assassinate people. And now it's routine to assassinate people. And Eric Holder was approached about that. He says self-defense. One of the people we killed was a 16-year-old boy, the son of Anwar al-Awlaki, who, you know, talked dirty about the United States and was probably a pretty bad guy. But his 16-year-old son hasn't been proven to have done anything. And he's dead. And he was assassinated by a drone. The U.S. government is deeply implicit in the expropriation of the Palestinian people. And I think most Americans don't know that several million Palestinians are living under military foreign occupation, have no control of their air, land, or water, and that people are trying to move them out. I think most Americans don't know that of the millions of Palestinians, some 11 million Palestinians, the majority are stateless. They have no citizenship. You know, it's a great tragedy. There are Americans who don't vote. A majority of Americans in many elections don't vote. They have citizenship. They could vote. Palestinians have no state. They have no citizenship. They could vote for the Palestine Authority, which has no power. It's all a mirage. And to his credit, Barack Obama came into office, I think, trying to do something about that, and he sent George Mitchell out, and there were negotiations. But this is a shell game, folks. This has been going on for a long time now. In 1967, Israel conquered the West Bank and Gaza. These were not territories that there had been a history of Jewish settlement in the pre-war period. They were not awarded to Israel by the United Nations General Assembly, and there's no legal framework in which a country, after World War II, you know, we tried to set up a world system where you can't just like grab your neighbor's territory and steal it. But the Israelis have been assiduously colonizing the West Bank ever since. They've got Gaza under a blockade where ordinary people can't sell the produce that they make for the most part, the products that they make, and where they have constant shortages. People die because they can't get permission to go to hospitals outside the Gaza Strip. People die because the electricity runs out in the hospital. They're under blockade. It's not a military blockade, it's a civilian blockade. They even, up until recently, the Israelis had a list of things they wouldn't let in, chocolate for children. The children of the Gaza Strip, a majority of the 1.7 million people who live in Gaza, were to be denied chocolate because their parents had voted for the Hamas political party slash militia. So they're under blockade in the Gaza Strip, and in the West Bank, the Israelis are putting every day more and more settlers into Palestinian land. They usurp that land, they claim it for their own, they dig deep wells, and they lower the water table so the Palestinian wells run dry. And they want the land, but they don't want the people. Just this week, they announced they're going to make 5 cantons, which is to say Bantustans. It's the same kind of policy that the South Africans used to have, the Afrikaners, of making sure the blacks in South Africa couldn't vote and sort of expropriating them. Well, you know, I'm a supporter of Israel proper. The Israelis, you know, I go to Israel. I have a lot of Israeli friends. Some of my friends in Ben Gurion University are in the political science department, which apparently is not teaching proper political science because the Israeli government is threatening to disband it. I think, you know, Israelis, a majority of them say in polls that they would give up land for peace. But the government that they have, the Likud government, which is in coalition, which is a far right-wing government, the Likud party is based in revisionist Zionism, which is about an iron wall and hitting the other guy before they can hit you. The Likud party went into coalition with parties to its right. You have people like Avigdor Lieberman, who's started life as a nightclub bouncer. And now wants to bounce the Palestinians. This government that the poor Israelis are suffering with is tied up with what Rashid Khalidi called the Israeli industrial, the settler industrial complex. There are a lot of people making a lot of money, including Sheldon Adelson, from the colonization of the Palestinian West Bank. Now, we don't see this on our television. Horrible things happen. Mosques are burned. Palestinians are attacked by armed vigilante settlers. We don't see any of that on our television for the most part. It's never mentioned. But it's the lead item in the news on the satellite cable channels, satellite and cable channels in the Arab world every night. They know what's being done to the millions of Palestinians every day. In the United States, as I said, the WikiLeaks cables make it clear that the U.S. comes out and says, oh, we wish the Israelis wouldn't do that. Settlement activity is unhelpful. But behind the scenes, we're colluding with the Israelis in these activities. The United States government is complicit in it. And this is not something hidden from the Arab world. And most Arabs, you know, the Egyptians and Libyans and Jordanians and so forth, consider the Palestinians in the West Bank to be kind of their cousins. We're beating up on their family. And people say, well, it can't possibly be that important to them. Well, I don't know. You know, back in the mid-19th century, there was that bit of trouble in Texas around the Alamo. And there was a kind of hysteria all across the then United States, and people in Maine and so forth were all excited about Daniel Boone and the siege and the horrible Mexican generals surrounding them. And there was a war fever in the United States over the Alamo. People were het up about it, even though you know, they weren't Texans, and they didn't know Daniel Boone or Sam Houston. And they identified with the siege of the Alamo. They thought it was part of, and even though, you know, Texas was not in the United States. Well, the Arab world identifies with the Palestinians are the Arab world's Alamo. And as long as the United States de facto is helping the Israelis screw over the Palestinians, we're going to have bad relations with the Arab world. Now, your congressmen and senators, the people who represent you, are voting in Congress to give Netanyahu $30 billion extra in weaponry and to let him do to the Palestinians whatever he wants to do. And one of the reasons that your congressmen vote like that was that they have lobbyists lobbying them for this. There's the Christian Zionists, there's AIPAC, there's various lobbies, and they don't hear from you. There's no decency in U.S. Middle East foreign policy with regard to the Palestinians, and it's because the decent people are not jumping up and down in this country and demanding that their congressmen be even-handed. Even poor Howard Dean got in trouble for saying we should have an even-handed Middle East policy. I mean, that's an insult, right? To say we should be even-handed. We should care about the Palestinians losing all the property, not having any citizenship rights, and so forth. That, for us to do that, that's bad. That's another one of the things we're not allowed to apologize for. Well, we've had these tremendous changes in the Arab world in the past 18 months. People came out in the streets in Tahrir Square in Cairo, and they made a peaceful revolution. They chanted peace, and they demanded that their dictator step down, a dictator that the United States had given over the years $1.5 billion to $2 billion a year for 31 years. And despite the firm U.S. backing for that dictator all those years, when the people wanted to overthrow him, I don't remember a single American flag being burned. Those revolutions weren't about us. We're used to everything being about us. But those revolutions were about the Egyptians, the Libyans, the Tunisians. And they weren't going to be distracted by, you know, the old rhetoric of anti-imperialism and so forth. And when the Obama administration ultimately dragged its feet, but it did the right thing in the end and supported the people, the U.S. was kind of taken off the table, I think, as a big issue for them. But what's happened is that there were small groups in each of these countries who are hate groups and very hardline, you know, they say hardline Muslims, but it's not really right because their imagination of what Islam is not shared by the vast majority of Muslims either now or in history. They have a very peculiar fundamentalist view of what Islam is, which doesn't actually accord with the Muslim tradition. And they're small. They're small groups. And they had grown up in particular to fight those dictators. And the way that they fought the dictators was with violence. They would set off bombs. They would get weapon training. And they didn't respect democracy, and they weren't fighting against a democracy, they were fighting against a dictatorship, and they just wanted their own form of the dictatorship instead of the secular one. Well, what happened in the past 18 months is that those small fundamentalist radical groups have been thrown on the trash heap of history. Because how you get power now in Egypt is by running for office. You have to develop constituencies. You have to get into office through the ballot box. And those guys are not any good at that. They're good at C4 explosives. And so they were being left behind. And when these right-wing Islamophobic networks in the United States, a combination of extremist Christians and brain-dead far right-wing Jews. Why do I say that? Jews in general are just like everybody else. I'm not making an anti-Semitic statement when I say that Pamela Geller or Daniel Pipes are brain dead Jews. They're brain dead because they get up in the morning every day, raise money, and devote all of their efforts to trying to convince white people, white Christians, to hate non-Christian minorities. And Jews who have that as their main activity are brain dead. Well, they're directing that hatred towards Muslims, but I want to tell you something. Once you habituate large numbers of people, the majority in a society, to hate minorities, it doesn't stay concentrated only on one minority. So these groups that they're cooperating with, like the guys who made this film, who are Coptic Egyptian Christians, and who have gone to Pamela Geller's, she was the one who got up the campaign against the Manhattan Mosque, who have gone to their conferences and hang around with them and cooperate with them. When they made this Islamophobic film, which could have, you know, could have repercussions on the Coptic Christians of Egypt, they put it out that it was made by an Israeli Jew, an Israeli-American Jew. They said a real estate developer, Sam Basile. They said 100 Jewish donors had given to make the movie. I mean, all of these are lies, and they're playing on anti-Semitic stereotypes of, you know, wealthy Jews and manipulative, and it's protocols of the Elders of Zion kind of stuff. These are the people who were cooperating with the Islamophobic networks of people like Pamela Geller and Daniel Pipes. So they put this trailer up on YouTube, and they dubbed it into Arabic to make sure that those radical groups in the Arab world would see it and would know about it. And then they worked their networks in Egypt to make sure to draw attention to it. This was all a conspiracy. This trouble that we've been having the last week was gotten up by Islamophobic networks in the United States quite deliberately, and I think probably in hopes of intervening in the presidential campaign, of turning Barack Obama into a Jimmy Carter, maybe of provoking embassy hostage taking and so forth. And they have succeeded in making a lot of trouble. So the worst people in both societies have gotten up this trouble. But I want to leave you with something hopeful here, which is most Egyptians and Tunisians and the places where American embassies have been attacked in the past few days are now very much devoted to parliamentary democracy. And they're going to have further parliamentary elections. And they put the Muslim fundamentalist parties in power often because they thought the Muslim fundamentalist parties are not corrupt, they believe in law and order. It's like the religious right in the United States gets votes in certain parts of this country for some of the same reasons. But what the religious right in these countries has demonstrated in the last week is that they're not very good about keeping order, and they have extremists in their ranks. And I think that what may happen is that these events could push politics, both in the United States and in the Middle East, to the left. And we see in Egypt already in the presidential election in May, the first round of the presidential election, the Egyptian left reemerged. The labor unions of Alexandria flexed their muscles and gave their votes to Hamdi Sabahi, who is a leftist. And he got about a fifth of the votes in the first round of the presidential elections. And I think we're going to see more of that as the Egyptians go back to the ballot box. The labor left is going to reemerge. In Egypt and Tunisia now, the left is forming a new big party coalition. So I think this was a fluke that the Muslim fundamentalist parties did so well in the aftermath of the Arab Spring, and it had to do with hopes for ends of corruption, making sure the old regime didn't come back, and law and order issues. But I think that people are beginning to have their eyes open, that there are extremist elements also on the religious right. And so I think we, very ironically also in this country, the way that Governor Romney mishandled the Libyan embassy incident and quite outrageously accused Barack Obama of sympathizing with the attackers, has harmed his campaign I think President Obama is handling these issues in a wise and restrained way. I think I have written that I think he managed to convince Mohamed Morsi, a leader of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, who's now president, to condemn what was done at the American embassy after Morsi dragged his feet. And so both in the Arab world and the United States, I think these moments of turmoil are also moments in which the pure is separated out from the dross, in which character is tested. And I think in both societies, we can hope to move forward towards a brighter and more progressive future. Thank you very much.